Next, we'll be turning to another tape. Arthur Bresson Jr., gay filmmaker, discussion of gay music and films. And this tape features songs by Tommy Tolle, Margie Orden, Paul Dubois, Helen Robbins, and Conan. I hope you'll find this tape very interesting. I did. And once again, I'd like to thank Frank and Steve.
My world, life I freely chose. My world, it has its highs and lows. The sun, it makes the day bright. The moon lights up the nighttime sky. The day ends in my world. Tonight I ask why. Why did I choose a life where blues are ordinary? Co-confusion is the rule of thumb. Why did I say yes to being gay? What was that feeling? Where did it come from? Why do I take a life where there's so much at stake? A life that takes your strength to be not sad. Why did I say yes to being gay? Why did I choose a choice I never had? I've taken to my heart a part that feels so ordinary, strength in sharing with another man. It's taken long to hear the song that brings me nearer to myself. I'm just the way I am. I've opted for a life spent loving with my brothers, a full accepting love I've never had. It's strange to say, but now since yesterday, I'm not only gay, I'm glad.
Well, my favorite song, I guess, is I guess it would be Tommy Tolle's Saying Yes to Being Gay. It's really, for me, it's a neat song. It's a song that when it was written, the associate producer on the film, Joseph Knudsen, didn't like the song. He thought it was negative. He said, Artie, this is going to be like a negative song, isn't it? He's saying that he hasn't known full love up to now. And I said, well, that's a whole problem in the gay community, that if someone shines a light on something that isn't quite according to Hoyle or isn't perfect, a lot of gay people feel, oh, you're running up the dirty laundry on the flagpole. I like the song because it seemed very honest about being gay, that it's not always neat and it's not always terrific, that sometimes it's very terrible, and not just from the political oppression, just from self-oppression. So a song that talks about hard choices and that it's not always peaches and cream and sweetness and light, I liked it very much. And I told Tommy that I thought the feeling that people would have when they watched the song with the pictures we put with it would be essentially a positive feeling, and I think generally in the film, audiences reacted to it positively.
The voice of Arthur J. Bresson, Jr., or as he prefers to be called, Artie. Artie is a filmmaker who has produced a number of gay films, both documentary and fictional in content. What makes his films particularly unique is that he uses originally composed and performed music that complement the gay themes. He will be talking about the various aspects of creating the films and the music.
I told someone yesterday that I was going to be doing this interview with you, and they said, well, what's gay music? And I sort of laughed because I guess it is a question. Anyway, when I was making my first feature, I wanted to have music that would go along with the pictures, which were going to be gay, two men falling in love with each other, you know, same-sex love. And so that was the first time I dealt with the issue of what music would fit the pictures. And we had some songs, and how those songs, the words in the songs, either would go with the pictures or the counterpoint with the pictures. Anyway, Passing Strangers was way back in 74, and then when Anita Bryant came on the scene in 76 and 77, I made the film Gay USA here in San Francisco with a whole lot of straight and gay people. And I thought, well, original songs, lyrics and music, would be a way of putting some of the political and emotional and feeling aspects of being gay into the picture. And so, if you've seen the film, it's basically one long parade stretching from New York to San Francisco through LA and Chicago. And there are songs, love songs, songs about marching, songs about gay consciousness that are played over the pictures of gay people demonstrating and having a great time and protesting. And one of those songs by Tommy Talley, Saying Yes to Being Gay, was sort of the breakthrough song for me in thinking about gay songs. I asked Tommy to write a song sort of affirming the whole lifestyle, and he came up with the lyrics to Saying Yes to Being Gay first and the music. I have a film open a few weeks ago in Los Angeles that's now playing the circuit called Forbidden Letters, which is a story about a man in prison and the younger lover who waits for him when he returns from parole. And that has four original songs, and by this point in my life, I'm really into having gay music and gay songs in my films. My films fall into the pattern of two character films with an older man and a younger man, sort of like my life. I usually picture the last scene in the film, what I want to have the feeling be. Since my films are structured, or perhaps overly structured, depending on which gay publication you read and review, I always picture the last scene and then how to aim the whole film, the sex scenes, the love scenes, the touching, the talking, the music, so that that last scene seems to come out of whatever's come before, so that when you sit down to watch an 80-minute film, the first minute links into the second, the third, to the very end of the picture. In my films, I've only explored the use of synchronized sound very little because of monetary problems. It's very hard to record sex with a sync camera unless you have a very good one. And I've tended to put things on the track like words, voiceovers, and of course that leads us to what we're doing here today, which is songs, because songs are poetry with music, or lyrics and music, and sung by an interpreter. A song can be made gay by the way it's sung. So in my films, I try and let the songs not just be filler or silence validation for the pictures, try and have the songs comment on the pictures. That can be one-to-one. Like in Gay USA, we had a song called Reflections by Margie Orton. Margie's a young woman in her late teens who I met very briefly, and she played this song for me. I thought it's a perfect love song because it encapsulates all the political ideas, and yet sort of a reggae or Brazilian type sound to it, and it would fit the film. There she speaks about loving a woman and holding a woman and being with a woman, so it was easy to put pictures of thousands of women marching while you hear her sing the song.
Of the
piece of music other than one-to-one, like showing the pictures you're talking about, is the contrapuntal, or using the opposite. So if a person's singing about, I feel very happy, ain't it great to be gay, in a film you can show gay people not being happy. And suddenly the song, which may have been a simple hymn, a paean to gay love, can take on added depth by showing pictures of people who might not be in love, who might be having trouble making contact. I mean, this is just traditional cinema, but traditional cinema is yet to catch up or catch in with gay movies. One song written by Paul Dubois, a young man here in San Francisco who's done local work as a straight artist, namely a person who's appeared at straight clubs. Paul has a really fine tenor voice and can sing folk or rock, and he wrote a song called Last Night's Man, which we engineered over in the Mission, Tommy Tadlock and Stephen Brown on the synthesizer. And in this song, Paul wrote it specifically for the images in the picture. And it's about going out to cruise when you have a lover who's not there. In this case, the lover's in prison, but the lover can be on a vacation in New York and you're spending a weekend in San Francisco. And the song works very well in the film, and I think it also works very well on its own, but it's the interaction of the picture with the words which really gives it to me a lot of emotion. See, a movie song is different than just listening to a song on a record, because a song on a record, you sit back in your living room and read the record jacket or get stoned, and you can imagine any pictures you wish. When you have a song with nouns and verbs in it that are going to play against specific pictures, you have to be careful, or else you may get an inopportune join of picture and sound. So if someone's singing a song about bananas, you don't want to show certain things on the screen because it'll get an unintentional laugh. The thing I listen for most in a song is what I look for. And the thing I'm listening with my ear for is concrete things. And when I worked with the different composers, Paul Dubois, Tommy Talley, or Ellen Robbins, I was looking for concrete images, words that gave me pictures. So a song like I Love a Man, from which we used in Gay USA, written by Paul Dubois, was a good example of that sort of song. I told Paul, I need a song that can play over pictures of men kissing and hugging in the street. And Paul brought the first version of the song in. It was almost perfect for my needs, because every image in the song was a physical image, physical meaning a specific visual image. It didn't talk about abstract feelings like alienation and words like that. It talked about, I love a man who is sometimes very rough in bed and uses physical words. And that's a thing I almost primarily prefer in music.
I love a man who is just tender enough, sometimes slightly rough when we make love. We know needs and try to be there. The sun rises in the sky when we're together, like blue through thick and thin and stormy weather. I like him, I respect him, he's a man. He is like a dancer, he is a silk scarf in the wind. He comes to me in grace, my arms are open. Sometimes for hours not a word is spoken, just good old-fashioned touching with affection. Oh, people sometimes look in our direction with not a word to say, in quiet dismay. I think that they're giving their approval. Our time is like a flower. When I'm with him all in bloom, he walks into the room, my heart starts beating. I memorize the way of greeting me, the powerful embrace of two men longing to hold each other till the new day dawning. It is real to me and more of a challenge than a bore to keep our manly separate souls together.
An example, though, of total serendipity in writing a song for a film was in Forbidden Letters. In the very last stage of the production, I realized I needed another song to open the color flashback when we go back to see how the two lovers met and what their life was like together, the ups, the downs, all that routine. And I was desperate for a song, and so usually when I'm desperate for a song, I dial up Tommy Talley and say, I have 2 days, I need a song. And he says, what's the song for? And I said, oh, it's for a Halloween sequence. And Tommy said, well, what's in the scene? I said, you know, it's a Halloween sequence. A lot of drag queens, a lot of gender fuck, you know, a lot of masks. You know, Black Orpheus only with a San Francisco tinge, and Richard has a tuxedo on and he has some glitter in his beard. And that's all I told him. The next day I get a call from Tommy saying, I've written this song, you know, and he plays the song for me. And you would think, since we only changed one word in the song, you would think he had seen the pictures beforehand. But the song, which eventually was titled Harlequin Eyes, which Tommy did in the film, was perfect for the pictures, and he never saw the pictures. So sometimes it's sheer serendipity.
Images and faces, all my senses are careening. The evening holds a mystery, somehow a sense of meaning. A symphony of black and white, a gentleman's touch. But is it just the mask I admire so much? Your hair is streaked with silver and your smile streaked with pain. Your eyes are streaked with anger like I never want to see again. Your heart is streaked with feeling like the depths of the sea. I see through the mask, I see me. Mirroring lives of a similar path, intertwined, I feel sure. But somehow inside there's a nagging suspicion, like a premonition. It makes me slightly sad and somewhat insecure. The glimmer from your face, form arms that wrap themselves around me. They taunt me, tease me, pull me towards you, yet they form a boundary. They give me glimpses of a glance I know is no disguise. I've seen that look before. You've got harlequin eyes. Harlequin.
You know, the big surprise in making Gay USA was 5 days before the parade. I had been spending that 10 days before that day getting ready for the film, recording the songs, some of which you're hearing today, getting other songs written, speaking to singers who might want to be in the film. But 5 days before, when we all woke up and there were the headlines, you know, Robert Hillsborough had been murdered in what many papers called a gay murder, and even after the trial of the accused, no one could say whether it was a gay murder. Now, I took it to be like a minority murder, a gay murder. And suddenly the parade, which was supposed to be a carnival and or a political demonstration, became this sort of funereal thing. So the song Send Me No Flowers tried to take into consideration the Hillsborough murder plus the up aspect that the film had.
Arty's films are both erotic and explicitly sexual. Some critics have labeled his films pornographic, using the negative connotation to express their reaction. Artie now discusses these criticisms.
When people view me as a pornographer, I usually let them run their tape till it runs out. I view myself as a filmmaker who makes pornographic or erotic or explicit films. I've never felt the put-down. I know people say it as a put-down. My parents have seen all my films, both the safe gay documentary and the more explicit pornographic films in all their formats, Super 8, the work print. My parents have seen those films. They enjoy them. My mother viewed them as a way of understanding more about what I was about. And my dad has taken tickets in the theater for me when I used to independently release my films early on in my career. So no, I don't feel a put down about pornography. Maybe because I view my films as films and like people to see the film rather than the category. So I prefer to be dealt with as an individual, as a temperament, as a personality, rather than as a slot or a pigeonhole or a designation. So that's the way I like my films to be treated. But on the other hand, pornography is a legitimate or illegitimate genre, and one has to deal with the givens of that genre. When one goes to a pornographic film, one expects to see a film that has sex in it, where the camera doesn't hide its eye and run into the next room and show two seagulls flying off, but shows what some people do. The fact that pornography as a genre has not been explored except by very few filmmakers. I mean, Wakefield Poole is a rare filmmaker. He was both one of the pioneers and one of the people who've expanded the perimeters of pornography with his latter films. There are not many other people who seriously work in pornography. Serious doesn't mean that they're glum or grim. It just means that they take the genre seriously. So I work in that genre sometimes, not all the time. And sometimes it's very disheartening, and then other times it's lots of fun, depending on how the public reacts to the film. But I'm not much moved by people clucking at me over cocktails and dinner that I am indeed a pornographer. Name calling is an easy game.
Filmmaking is a very expensive medium to work in. Economic realities are particularly harsh when you're making gay films. Distribution is another problem when you're dealing with prejudice both from the straight world and within the gay community itself.
There's never been a gay film that's broken the box office commercially until a gay film, be documentary or narrative story or whatever, or even pornographic, really shakes the American straight heterosexual box office for those ducats, those dollars. Budgets are going to be low. No producer is going to put up $500,000 or $1 million, by the way, which is low, but to gay people, gay artists is a lot of money. No one's going to risk $1 million on a gay picture because no gay picture has ever made a lot of money. So when I'm making a film, or any of the people that I know are making a film, we're talking about a $6,000 to $25,000 budget. For a feature film is incredibly tiny, terribly minuscule. Conan, or Ron Dunham, his real name, his professional name Conan, did a song called Pass It On to the Stranger for Forbidden Letters. And Conan's a great one-taker. His band rehearsed for hours and they did all of their work on tracks, and he just came in and did the song in one take. And any low-budget filmmaker and any gay filmmaker loves that type of an artist because you capture the full sort of feeling of the performance.
Pass it on to the stranger. Everyday feelings coming on. You're afraid to show your love, so afraid to go alone. Share your love with the stranger. Gently he calls you to his side. Is the love still inside your heart? Keep your heart satisfied. share your dream with a stranger. Let him take you away. Leave your fears far behind. Nothing's left to say. Everyday feelings coming on. You're afraid to show your love, so afraid to go alone.
I usually make films to make a profit. The only film I've made that was not a profit designed film was Gay USA, which was made with donated labor. Everyone worked for free on the film. I still owe $20,000 on that film, namely for developing and stock and the helicopter and distribution. I owe that money to one human being, but no people in the film have ever seen any of the profits that have come in from the film. Not much money has come in from that film, although a lot of people have seen it. We provided it free of charge to lots of gay groups across the country, because outside of San Francisco, LA, and New York, Houston, those are gay enclaves. Mostly America is very ungay. All my other productions, I aim them to make a profit. Most of the time, the major characters in the film, these are the erotic films, own a part of the film with me. I don't think I've ever paid a salary on a film. The person is told the story of the film, they're given a script, an outline, they talk to me at lunch, and then we do the scene. They own from 2 to 10% of the profits on the film after what it costs to make is recouped. So if the film were to take off, and Forbidden Letters is starting to take off in terms of bringing some money in for all of us, they all have a chunk of the action, a piece of the pie. There's no reason why when you make a film you can't involve the people who make it in somewhat of a share of the profits. After all, they're the ones that put their faces and their bodies up there on the screen, and when the censure comes down, and if there is a crackdown, as when Harry Reems, who was in Deep Throat, was arrested and prosecuted, if it ever came to a gay pogrom, sorry to mix my ethnic metaphors, then those people, the evidence is right on film, their bodies and their faces. So that's the personal reason why I do it. Practically, sometimes I don't have the money to pay in the beginning. But the real reason is because I'd like that if the film ever made a huge chunk of money, they make the money with me. Because if it turkeys out, we've had the, as they say in legalese terms, the glorious experience of having worked together. We had to wait a year and a half to get a distributor for Gay USA. David Pascoe, the co-producer of the film, and myself basically did distribution, along with the late Joseph Knutson, who distributed the film down the West Coast. But distributors turned us away on the grounds that first the film was too parochial and that it was a gay film and had gay in the title. And that seems to be the kiss of death professionally and commercially. And then it was just a chore to find someone who understood the picture. Films like Word Is Out and Gay USA and In the Best Interest of the Children, which is a lesbian film about women reclaiming their children from broken marriages, straight marriages. These films face pioneer hills to climb because there has not been a gay cinema and has not been a gay documentary cinema to speak of. And so these films are sort of breaking the first eggs for the omelet called gay cinema. And when you're doing that, you run up against not only traditional prejudice from the straight world, but you run up against a particular form of prejudice which is specific in the gay world, namely closet gay prejudice. So I've run into the problems of people saying, well, I like your film, Gay USA, and I'd like all gay people to see it, but I don't think it's the film straight people should see because it will scare them. So distribution is always the handmaiden or the hand servant of box office. And until gay films make a lot of money, producers and distributors are going to be very, very leery and sort of suspicious of gay films. Because in America, although your heart may sing, the dollar talks.
So Glad to Be Loving You from Gay USA was written and performed by Ellen Robbins. Artie shares his feelings about the future of the gay movement and his personal future.
In 1977, when we made Gay USA, I figured that was the last of the original Stonewall parades. Anita Bryant reared her ugly head. Everybody, gay and straight, got together. Lesbians came out of places we didn't know they were, and older gay people and businessmen got together. And 77, for me, was the last of those underground parades. The parade in 78 seemed like a different parade. It was more homogeneous. The parade committee had more say about where people stood. There's a lot of people freaking out about there wasn't enough politics, there was too much politics, where are the floats? And this was just the sort of talk that sounded like a movement above ground, a movement starting to feel its muscles and trying to figure out who would lead it, which egos would come forward. And so the new fear, and it's a valid fear, is the co-opting of the movement, as they call it. I would say it's just a matter of gay life moving into mainstream America, just as blacks have started to do. And in doing that, you start to lose some of your old idiosyncrasies, some of your old arguments. And you trade one off for another, I think. So yeah, it bothers me a little in thinking that the gay movement will be co-opted and forget all the things it learned the hard way, like looking out for one another and giving the guy, your brother or your sister, to use those words, the benefit of the doubt and not coming down on each other so hard like you're writing for Time Magazine or making movies at MGM. And yet, that's part of the growing pain as you enter the culture, as you try and make your culture part of the culture. The problem in that is, as you make your culture part of the culture, you start to be subsumed by the culture. People are strange. They're best in crisis. They forget how much it took to get the little gains we've had just because there's a softball team with the police, with a gay team and a police team. You know, that's the part I not worry about, but it bothers me. I'd like to make a film that could play to all people. I made Gay USA specifically as a film that could play to straight and gay people. My main interest as a filmmaker is to communicate with people. I think I have something special to give in terms of my gay experiences because I am a gay man. But I also have things to say about comedy and musicals because I'm a singer also. So I have lots of films that I will never make. I hope to make 3% of the films that I could make or want to make or have dreamed of making. So yeah, I want to make films that are commercial, that are successful, that are not sellouts because I don't think art and entertainment are mutually exclusive. I don't want to make experimental films. I don't want to make films that no one sees. I want to make films that you can go to a theater to see, that you don't have to watch on a sheet in a little back room because that's the only place they would play it. So I guess one would say I have upward mobile aspirations to being a small big name director. I've put my names on my pornographic films and on my gay documentary, so I guess I'll keep the same name if I were to make a different kind of film in the straight ghetto.
I want to thank Artie Bresson and the musicians who worked with him for the interview and the music used in this program. The synthesizer music was performed by Jeffrey Olmsted. All musical selections are copyrighted by the artists. Our engineer was Guy Grand, and I'm Steve O'Neill. I produce this program in San Francisco. Our closing selection will be Anthem from Gay USA by Tommy Talley. Thanks for listening.
People together, people is one, all people stand, take your lives in your hands. Freedom for all soon shall be won, soon shall be won. Gaze all together, joined hand in hand, all of you stand, take your lives in your hand. Woman with woman, man with man, gaze with the straight folks, the old with the young, all people stand, take your lives in your hands. Freedom for all soon shall be won. The dark-skinned and light-skinned, all not just some, all people stand, take your lives in your hands. Freedom for all soon shall be won. From seacoast to seacoast, all over the land, all people stand, take your lives in your hands. A curtain of people, hand in hand. Together, people is one, all people stand, take your lives in your hands. Freedom for all soon shall be won, soon shall be won, soon shall be won.
That was the program on Arthur Bresson Jr. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed bringing these tapes to you. We'll be hearing tapes from Raven's Head Communications throughout November and into December. And they've been doing some very interesting work, and I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly have.